This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
We're going to spend some time with Brian Fisher of College Football Talk. Covers the college scene on a national level. And Brian, we heard some pretty strong comments from NCAA President Mark Emmert on Tuesday. He says he's very concerned about the season moving forward. He's still hedging his bets a little. But what do you make of what he said publicly?
Well, I think he kind of spoke for a lot of presidents. And let's face it, that's who he is working for, is a lot of these college presidents, about being simply concerned that everything going on in the country and how much the NCAA is going to kind of fit into that picture. And so, the comments that he had, certainly to ESPN and others this week, I'm sure are echoed around the country with a lot of these presidents seeing, kind of the danger zone that we're in terms of not only making decisions, but certainly coming up on a critical time for moving forward for everything.
What are they waiting for? And I don't mean that to be snide. It's a sincere question. What are they waiting for before they would make any type of definitive decision?
I think they're just waiting for extra time, to be honest. I know a lot of the presidents are frankly, wanting to, wait for certainly the NFL to kind of make some moves, for Major League Baseball to see what's happening after the Marlins situation. I think really everybody is kind of just hoping for a little more time, getting a little bit more information, especially at the local level. I think that's, you talk with athletic directors, you talk with the administrators across the country, just seeing some improvement in those numbers on a local level, I think would at least allow them to be a little more comfortable at doing things and moving forward. So when you talk about the Big 12 and the ACC and the SEC kind of waiting around, I think that's kind of key in terms of what's going on, and just really giving themselves a little bit more time to make a more impactful decision.
When it comes to football versus all of the other sports, could the decision-making process be different? Could it be separate for football as opposed to the other sports that don't earn revenue?
I think it's absolutely separate. And let's face it, that is the big moneymaker. That's what the athletic directors are really judged on. I think it's certainly what the presidents understand is propping up a lot of these athletic departments. And so that is where the focus is going to be. I think if you had to sacrifice, your soccer teams, your swimming teams, maybe make push those seasons to the spring in order to save football and really focus on that. I think you would see a lot of athletic directors vote for that. And, I think that's why certainly last week when the board of directors met there was some concern over, maybe they would cancel those fall sports. Everybody understands that football has got to kind of make the decision for all the other sports first. If you can bring back football, then maybe you can kind of get into the weeds and bring back some of the others. But without those other sports, without those non-revenue sports, there's probably a little chance that football is going to happen as well. So everybody wants to kind of make sure that they do understand the optics for this, and they understand that there is also one sport that is kind of driving the bus in terms of the money and in terms of the decision-making.
Right. So the issue is that if you don't have football, many of these other sports will suffer and will not be funded. And maybe 1 year doesn't make a huge difference, but as much as optics matter, and I agree with you, and we're talking about equality and everyone having the same opportunities, Title IX, et cetera. At the same time, without the football money, a lot of these athletic department budgets won't be funded, correct?
Absolutely. I mean, you're talking, I know Barry Alvarez has come out and said, you know, you talk about, you know, nine-figure losses, you know, Iowa State, you know, similar numbers. You know, this is many millions of dollars. And even the big-time programs in the Big Ten and the SEC and the Pac-12, without football money, they are hurting because they have really kind of put themselves into this corner with years and years of really spending up to their limit. I mean, it's basically, you know, if you can raise $5 million, you're going to end up spending it. It might be on, you know, new soccer shorts. It might be on, you know, a new football analyst. You know, you end up going to spend that every year. And with margins that thin, you know, it really does put a lot of these schools in a precarious situation because they don't have that rainy day fund. It has simply been money in and money out for so many years right now. And all that bloat, all that extra administrators, extra coaching staff, extra facilities that, you know, you can certainly question whether it was needed. That's kind of coming back to bite a lot of these programs, and a reason why I think everybody is so focused on this decision, knowing they're going to lose millions of dollars no matter what in 2020 and likely in 2021. It's really just a matter of how much and how can we really keep that to a minimum.
So just to clarify, Brian, is the final decision that of Mark Emmerts, or is the final decision that of the conference commissioners?
Yeah, I think we're basically going to see the final. Certainly the Pac-12 has already made their decision in terms of football, and they would like to proceed with that conference-only schedule. I think we're going to eventually see certainly the state and local leaders get a little bit more involved over the next week or so in terms of pushing what they want. I think in the end, this is ultimately a decision that rests with those local authorities. Number one, if they're going to permit you know, these teams and 100 plus individuals starting to, you know, get in close contact, not only just working out, but practicing, playing games, traveling across the country. You know, it's really going to be those local health authorities that are the ultimate decision makers, whether they have restrictions or not. Then it's going to fall on the presidents, which are very risk adverse at this point. You know, they really just want to see their schools open up so they can get those revenues coming in. And then really at the backseat of the bus is kind of the conference commissioners kind of hearing all this, trying to guide the decision as best they can. And certainly next week, the week after that, into early August, we're going to start to see those conference commissioners start to really relay those decisions that are being made in their leagues, and we'll kind of get some movement on that. But until then, it's just a lot of talking amongst the athletic directors, trying to provide the best information to their president and on up the food chain as we kind of get closer to the ultimate kind of point where it's a no-go decision. And some of these presidents are going to have to vote for the fall season as we know it.
Mm. Brian Fisher of College Football Talk with us here after hours on CBS Sports Radio. Brian, the conference-only model is one that multiple conferences have already adopted or at least indicated that they would like to try. What is the benefit of doing games only inside your own conference?
Well, I think it's twofold. You obviously, the testing protocols, all the stuff that you would need to have in place, you know, can really be standardized across the conference. You know, an Iowa can be the same as a Michigan State, even though they're you know, in certainly different areas of the country with different, you know, viral caseloads across the region. So you can at least standardize that part. And then the other thing it really does is give these schools, give these conferences flexibility. You know, they can move it back a week. You know, if one team ends up not being able to play, whether it be local restrictions, whether it be somebody on the team, you know, such as we saw this last week with Rutgers and Michigan State simply just shutting down, they can move those to the end of the year. They can change, you know, how they kind of play their games and determine their conference champion. So flexibility is really the key. And the reason why kind of the Big Ten and the Pac-12 kind of jumped to the lead at this point in terms of going conference only, they wanted that flexibility and they wanted to be clear to, I think, everybody else, saying, look, you know, we don't want to deal with all these contracts. We don't want to deal with these non-conference opponents. We don't want to deal with all this other. We just want to focus on really getting games as much as possible. And in order to do that, that's going conference only. And so I think there is an eventual decision coming with, you know, the Big Ten, the ACC, others. They might not be conference only at this point, but it certainly does trend to having that flexibility this fall.
We're spending a few minutes with Brian Fisher of College Football Talk. So let's jump right back in here, and we're putting college football under a microscope. But Brian, when you compare some of the other protocols that we've seen from the NBA, the NHL, Major League Baseball, and you look at the guidelines they're putting in place, extensive guidelines, are there pieces of these other sports and their setups that could work for college football?
Well, you know, I think, prior to this weekend, I would have said baseball is kind of the one that everybody is really circling because of that travel component. You know, they're testing multiple times a week. Obviously, you're talking about limiting, the contacts that players have in terms of not only the ballparks themselves, but, they're playing games regularly. You've got those shuttles back and forth between the team hotels. You're staying on the road. I think a lot of people around college athletics and college football in particular were really pointing to Major League Baseball and saying if they can't pull this off, if they can't do it with their testing, with the amount of resources that they've pumped into that, there's no chance college football has. Now, we'll see after this week with the Marlins situation how that affects things. But I think baseball was definitely put up there as kind of the big thing. And obviously, there's the NFL and that whole picture in terms of what they're going to do over the next couple of weeks, next month, leading into their games. And I think everybody also is really looking at what worked and what didn't work overseas, especially in Europe with European soccer. Mm. I think you look at the Bundesliga coming back in Germany. They didn't have a single positive test, so obviously the case numbers in Germany were a little bit lower. But the testing, the face shields and training, that sort of stuff really kind of set the early standard, and then we kind of had it refined by Major League Baseball, and that's really where a lot of these colleges are going to take those kind of game plans and really tailor them to what suits them this fall.
Just to clarify, we're looking at a model that has no fans in the stands, right? Despite what anybody else might be doing, that's pretty much off the table.
I feel like it. I know there's stuff, Ohio State coming out and saying that they were going to have, 20,000 fans at the Shoe, and Texas is modeling 50%. But I just cannot see it. Given where we are combating the virus, giving all that needs to be put in place to have it. I mean, just to have, 50,000 fans, there's not even fans across, Europe where the caseload is significantly lower. The virus is just less of a factor there, and they're being very cautious and being very optimistic, and maybe late this fall, October, November, to where fans could maybe return to sporting events in smaller numbers. I cannot see 50,000 people down there in Austin. I cannot see 20,000 people. And we saw the governor of Ohio kind of come out and said, well, I didn't really hear about that plan. I'm not so sure about that. And I think you're going to see more local and state health authorities kind of step in and say, I know you need the revenue, guys, but we're not in a place where you can have 20,000 people in one spot six Sundays a year or six Saturdays this fall.
Are those decisions, though, also governed by the local mandates? Because there's a major piece of this as well. Governors from state to state have a bit of autonomy, and so one governor can decide one thing, and another governor can decide something else.
Yeah, no, I think that is absolutely a key component in this. And you're not going to see fans at a sporting event at USC or UCLA. You're certainly not going to see it, at a Syracuse. I think there are certainly some governors that have been pretty clear in terms of, you're not going to have fans at games. Certainly, if Major League Baseball, if the NFL, cannot bring fans back, I seriously doubt that's going to happen in colleges. And, you've got to keep in mind, too, that throughout all this planning, it can all be for naught once the students really come back onto campuses in greater numbers. I think that is the real concern with a lot of people. Not only just having fans from different parts of the state, different areas, whatnot. I think there was real concern, once the students get back on campus, how are they going to manage that? How are they going to have enough tests for all of them? I think there's just so many unknowns. I think a lot of these schools, as much as they would like that revenue, as much as they want those 20,000 fans in the stand to be cheering on touchdowns this fall, I just have a hard time believing, based on everything I've heard and seen and read, that the state and local health authorities are going to be comfortable with having that happen. Mm-hmm. Now, maybe it happens. Maybe somebody kind of sticks their neck out. But I think at the end of the day, if pro teams in areas that have have the virus under a little better control than what we've had in regions in this country are not having fans. I have a hard time believing that's going to be the case this fall at college football stadiums.
Brian Fisher of College Football Talk on After Hours with us here, CBS Sports Radio. So can you imagine that? At some of these stadiums that are known for the noise, the atmosphere, can you imagine what it's like if they're empty?
You know, I've watched a lot of MAC games over the years and a lot of lower-level football, so I think it can be done. It's definitely going to be a weird feeling, almost like a scrimmage. I go back to a couple of close practices and scrimmages that, you know, you would catch here and there. That's basically what it's going to feel like. I mean, I imagine, you know, the Fox and ESPN are going to pump in crowd noise. They're going to do what is necessary to kind of give it an element of feel if we do get games this fall. But, you know, at the end of the day, this is a unique season. And I think everybody understands that. Everybody understands that things are going to be a little bit different, not only in terms of what we see on the field, but also, you know, what we're hearing, what we're seeing in terms of the television product as well. And it's going to be unique. That's certainly for sure.
This is it's so like 2020 that we have far more questions than we have answers, for sure. It's really a wait and see approach, and it seems like the atmosphere changes every day. But how confident are you in the leadership in college football? And I know we're talking about sports in general in the fall, but the conference commissioners to make those decisions, to be able to come together and find some common ground and make decisions that have the best interests of the schools and the players in mind.
Well, you know, you talk with the conference commissioners, they are acting kind of in the best interest of their schools. And I think that's what's led to a little bit of friction, certainly, you know, in terms of when the Big Ten made their decision. I don't think there was any surprise that they made it, but it was more of a shock that, hey, I thought we were kind of all on the same page, going to announce it at the same time. Mm. And that has led to a little bit of friction. But, you know, the bottom line is every school is certainly out for their own, and they're going to make the decision that's right for their campus, for their athletic department, for their football team. And, you know, that filters on up the line for these conference commissioners as well, with their leagues. Now, everybody would love to play 12 games. I don't think that's going to end up happening anywhere in the country, but, they're going to play, you know, hopefully as many as they can possibly get in. And, you know, we'll certainly see. It's just going to be a strange 2020 season.
Right.
And I think as much as everybody, you know, wants to have everything close to normalcy, I think there is certainly an understanding as we get kind of down to crunch time with the decision making we've got to make the right decision, and we've got to be flexible in terms of, you know, what's going to come at us in this fall in terms of games being played, games not being played, and hopefully there will be some college football, but even though it's not going to look like what we're certainly used to the last couple of years.
So then what do you expect to hear from the ACC presidents and chancellors on Wednesday?
I based on everything that I've been hearing, I don't think there's going to be too much of an announcement. Now, I think it's always difficult with the decisions coming from these college presidents, the fact that, you know, you lock them in a room, or in this case, you know, a Microsoft Team meeting or a Zoom meeting, you know, the direction of the discourse can go away nobody can really predict. So do I expect a decision? No. But, you know, if the ACC presidents kind of get together and they say, you know, here's the options on the table, here's what we're kind of facing, maybe somebody gets skittish. I mean, you go back to March, you know, when the conference tournament started to, you know, really get canceled and have decisions made. You know, a lot of it kind of came down to a domino of the Duke basketball team saying we're not playing. And that was a decision from the Duke president there. I would imagine, you know, we could have something similar over the next couple of weeks in terms of one president kind of getting skittish and saying, you know what, we're just not going to play. And that leads to a whole host of other decisions. And I think that is a concern amongst the athletic directors, but also an understanding that let's keep talking this out. I know everybody wants to meet. Let's get caught up on plans, not only Wednesday in the ACC, but the SEC later this week and beyond. And let's kind of push this decision as much as we can later in the fall to where we have a better grasp of what the kind of ground rules are and what the kind of situation is going forward.
Certainly, now that we're getting close, we can expect there to be a greater sense of urgency. All right, you can find Brian on Twitter at Brian, B-R-Y-A-N-D, Fisher, F-I-S-C-H-E-R. Covers college football on the national scene for College Football Talk. And you can also find him on Athlon Sports. It's great to talk to you, and thank you so much for answering all of our questions as best you can.
Yes, it is a changing situation, but always happy to talk college football in whatever form it's going to take this season.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.